Welcome to the NLP View with your host, Donna Blunston. Each week, Donna will explore how the techniques of NLP can help improve your personal and professional life. And now, here's your host, Donna Blunston.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NLP View Radio Show. My name is Donna Blunston. On today's show, I am joined by the inspiring Matt Caulfield, author of the best-selling book, The Meta Model Demystified, which is part of the NLP Demystified series. Neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, is a form of applied psychology which is formulated through the study of subjective experience, a methodology that can be applied across multiple fields, namely therapy, healthcare, business, sports, and personal development. The meta model is one of the language patterns within NLP, which Matt Caulfield rightly explains as the most powerful pattern that NLP has developed, enabling the user of the pattern to become a master communicator, enhancing all areas of personal and interpersonal skills. Unfortunately, the meta model has previously been presented in quite a complex way, which in Matt's book, The Meta Model Demystified, he has very successfully broken the model down into a concise and clear pattern that it should be, enabling everyone to be able to understand it easily and use it correctly. So I have the great pleasure of welcoming to the show Matt Caulfield. Hello, Matt.
Hello, Donna. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Oh, you're more than welcome. So thank you to you, and a huge thank you for writing your book.
No worries.
I just wish you wrote it about 8 years ago when I studied it. It's very good, and I have learned loads, and I'm looking forward to using it with my students, yeah. Really, and pinching a lot of the ways that you've explained it, because it'll make my job a hell of a lot easier now.
No worries. I pinched a lot of it from other sources, so I can't really complain if other people pinch what I've written about. I can't remember who said it, but a talented artist is a talented thief, so you have to know which sources to go and pinch things from, don't you?
You do. And we're all here at the end of the day for the same purpose.
Exactly.
Which, you know, it's that really. Well, I guess before we start, Matt, could you tell our audience a bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I originally got into NLP in around about 97 or 98. You might find this hard to believe if you meet me now, but I used to be quite shy and very unconfident. So I took up martial arts, because I thought that would give me the confidence that I desired. But what I found was it might give me confidence in certain very specific situations, but it wasn't particularly useful in things like job interviews or meeting people for the first time, because having the ability to punch someone really hard in the face isn't really appropriate in those situations. So I got chatting to my martial arts instructor at the time, and he was using a lot of NLP that I discovered in his teaching and in his classes and in his self-protection approach. So he started to introduce not just me, but a lot of his students to this NLP stuff. And I just found it really interesting. It resonated with me on quite a few levels, partly because it was so pragmatic and so useful. And secondly, because it tied in with sort of a lot of the big questions I had in life as well, you know, sort of the very, you know, sort of slightly philosophical approach. So I was in my early 20s at the time, so I was sort of going through that, oh, wow, man, everything's cosmic kind of phase. And NLP seemed to give some really good ideas and suggestions there. So I saved up my pennies, and I went and trained in NLP with Richard Bandler in 99. It was when Paul McKenna was still running NLP training courses, and it was with his company that he'd founded with Michael Breen, so it was the McKenna-Breen training company. And I came out of my NLP practitioner training. At this stage, I had no interest in doing NLP as a business or anything like that. It was purely and simply personal development. But of course, as you know, you come out sort of evangelical and overexcited, and you go down the pub and you tell all your friends what you're doing. And if people come to you and go, oh, can you help me quit smoking? Can you make Dave think he's a washing machine? You know, all those sort of things. And so I started building a small private practice, doing very, very basic change work on people, and kind of got the bug for it. So I saved up enough money, and in 2001, I did my master practitioner. And at that point, I decided to experiment with setting up a small part-time practice. At the time, you know, this was back in 2001, like I say. So at the time, there wasn't really that much NLP around as such. It wasn't very well known back then, unlike it is now, where it's really, really exploded over the last 5 or 6 years. And then in 2003, really just to complete the set, I did my trainer training. And it was the last time that Richard Bandler had did his trainer training in the UK, other than he's doing another one this October. So I thought it was a good opportunity. It's been the first time I've been in the UK for quite a while, and I didn't want to miss out. At that point, I didn't really have any interest still in becoming an NLP trainer. But when you complete your NLP training, as you know, you have to do, you become a provisional trainer, then you have to complete an NLP training of your own to get fully certified. So I teamed up with the person who introduced me to NLP, who was an NLP trainer at the time. And we, between us, we founded the Birmingham NLP Training Academy, which was the first dedicated NLP training company in Birmingham. And then since then, I've gone on and continued with training NLP. And in 2005, I took the big step of quitting my full-time well-paid job to go into the vague and nebulous world of self-employment as an NLP trainer, which, as you know, is an exciting and a great adventure all by itself.
It is. Yeah. Wow, what a story. It does capture you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It certainly bowled me over, and I wanted more. I had a hunger for it. I was finding out more about myself and helping people in ways that they've never been helped before. I think it's just the ability to ask questions to people that they've never been asked before and open up those doors that they didn't even know were there.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Yeah, very much. It's just the reason I fell in love with the meta model in particular, I think I was lucky that I had a good teacher, because Michael Breen has spent a lot of time looking at the meta model, and he's very much redesigned it from the ground up. So I must tip my hat to Michael I must give him, you know, the praise he deserves, because without meeting him, I don't think the meta model demystified would exist as a book. There was certainly, even though I haven't, you know, I stand very much in the fact I haven't ripped him off blind, but he certainly inspired me and pointed me in a direction where I needed to go to find the answers for myself. And hopefully with the meta model demystified, I've tried to do the same for the people out there. So it's, as you say, it's just the power of questions. The thing you realize is just by asking one question in one way, gets a completely different result than if you ask a different question, what seems a very similar question, but you get a totally different response, which is incredible.
It is. It's very, very powerful. One, you know, I do love the meta model. And I think as a linguistic tool, it should be adopted by anyone from, well, I mean, it's used, as I've said before, across all different fields. But especially for me within the therapeutic and the healthcare side, if that was a model that was used in the GP surgeries, for example, when they've got their 5-minute consultation, it would... You know, they've only got 5 minutes most of the time anyway, and the meta model gets you right to the point rather than all the waffle that you waste around trying to get to there.
Yeah.
So as a tool to be taught in that sense, it would save so much money and get better, in my opinion, better results for the patient seeing them.
Yeah, I would like. I kind of work with a rule of thumb with the meta model when I'm doing coaching or whatever it is, and I have this rule of 5 questions. Which is simply, I have 5 questions to get to the point. And if you realize, you don't always get there with 5 questions, you know, sometimes it will take 10, 15, you know, 30 or whatever. But if you really limit yourself to a tiny number of questions and think, right, I've really got to get to the point now, we've really got to get to the crux of the issue with 5 questions, you really treat them as a valuable resource, which means you really think about what questions you need to ask. You really consider what the person's telling you. And a lot of people, we kind of throw questions around willy-nilly without really thinking about what we're asking the question for. And if the meta model doesn't teach us anything else, it teaches us that questions are so powerful, we need to really be laser sharp with them. And once you start getting that idea in your mind of that's how you use the meta model, then actually the questions you ask really start to become quite natural and quite obvious. I think it was Michael Breen that did it for me. Actually, I was in a seminar with him, and he turned around and said, a lot of people think the meta model is a linguistic tool. And they think that because it's based on the linguistic model of transformational grammar. But really, it's a logical tool. It's about critical thinking.
It's true.
And once you think about it as a logical tool of critical thinking, it completely changes what the meta model is, or at least it did to me anyway. So.
Yeah. Would you explain the meta model to our audience?
Oh, yes. Sorry, here we are talking about the meta model. We haven't really said what it is, have we? Nothing like being nice and general. The meta model, it was the first fruit of NLP, really. In fact, it came about before NLP was named. It was NLP got its name in around about 1976. And the meta model was essentially Richard Bandler's university thesis on studying great communicators. At the time, these were therapists. And this is where I think some people have got the idea that NLP is an alternative therapy, where it's not. It just happened to study therapists to begin with. And it was looking at the people who supposedly had the same training, the same experience as everybody else, yet for some reason these people were getting these magical results that nobody else could replicate. So Richard wanted to study these magical communicators and find out the structure of the language they were using so that we could copy the results they were getting, so they could teach it to other people. And this then, of course, came out in the two books, The Structure of Magic, Volume 1 and 2. It teamed up with John Grinder at this time, as people know, who was a transformational grammar teacher at university. So that's why they based it around, at the time, what was transformational grammar, which was the linguistic model of the day, on Noam Chomsky's work. And out of that came they used the transformational grammar framework. So even though the meta model is not a complete model of language, it doesn't need to be, it gives us enough information to be able to really drill down to people's what's called their deep structure or their map of the world, which tends to go on at an unconscious level, which means that we're not consciously aware of it. So it's asking people these questions to be able to enrich their experience, specify their experience, and clarify actually what they're talking about. It works on the very basic principle that we as humans, as far as we're aware, we're the only creatures that use language, although if you've read Robert Anton Wilson, he claims that gorillas and dolphins can talk as well. But we're the only people that use language. So not only does language describe our representation of the world, it describes our sensory experience, it also defines our sensory experience. And if we don't have the words, people, young children know this, if you don't have the words to describe what's going on, you find it very difficult to express that to yourself and to other people. So the meta model is a great tool to help people enrich their internal representation in words, in a linguistic form that then allows us to start to make changes where appropriate, which is why I think it's the most powerful and most important model in NLP, because you can do all this, techniques and things like that, but if you don't know what you're doing it for, then you get random results.
Yeah, I agree. I do agree. And I think a lot of I certainly find that often when people will come to you with specific things that they want to deal with, others come to you with no idea what they want, and they've never actually been asked what they want.
Yeah.
So often when you start asking them, what is your, what problems or how to describe what's happening and what they want to change, they don't know, or they do know, but they give you such a big woolly selection of generalizations that have got no substance to them. So being able to using the meta model, you can pick through and find out what the actual core problems are, so that for the client, you're not only will they get the best result, but you're serving them in the best way that you can.
Yeah.
Because often what they think might be the problem might be how they've the language that they've used to describe their problem might be perceived differently.
Yeah.
So it enables you to go in and just to check that what you're going to do is actually going to serve them in the correct way.
Yeah, I think because we all come at the world with our own maps, as we know this. The map is not the territory. It's the first commandment of NLP, as it were. It was written on the back of the stone tablets that Moses brought down from the mountain. The map is not the territory, really, is the key fundamental principle of NLP that everything else is based on. So we all come with our own maps and our own models, and sometimes, as you say, you're taking in information from this person, you're filtering it quite naturally through our own models, and then offering back what we think is a response or an answer or a solution to their value set. But if you think at that point, it's gone through so many different stages of filtering, adjustment, generalization, distortion, deletion, that if we don't take the time to ask some specific questions, you might offer a solution, but it won't be the appropriate solution. I see this so much in consultancy. Consultants come in with their own models, and then they just hoover up information, and the questions they ask aren't specific to the organization, they're specific to the model. So they tend to get the same results wherever they go. Of course they will. They ask the same questions in the same way and put it through the same process. Whereas the meta model helps us avoid that. And the key thing about the meta model is getting yourself as much as you can. Obviously we can't completely, but get ourselves out of the way as much as possible. In fact, I always say the place to start with the meta model is yourself. You know, when you make spurious generalizations, distortions and deletions, and you know, I'm as guilty as the next person at making random statements that are completely baseless. You've got to get the practice of meta modeling your own communication first.
Yeah. It's amazing how much we don't say.
Yes.
And one of the big things for me with NLP is it's a whole thing of what isn't being said.
Mm.
And you know, that is where the meta model has got its power, because it finds what's not being said.
Yeah.
And you know, one of the things as well is NLP is as much an art as it is a science.
Yeah.
So, you know, the art is within that individual practitioner. And those gut feelings that you get when there's incongruency between what you're hearing and what you're seeing,
yeah,
or feeling with the patient that you're with or client, it's that tool that enables you to unpick and find its way through to find out what's actually going on.
Yeah, I think one of the greatest things about the meta model I find is, as you say, Pete, it's what's not being said. But as we know, when people say things, when words come out of our mouths, they're a summary, they're a conclusion of complex processes that are going on in our minds. And we can, by understanding the meta model, particularly the areas of presupposition in the meta model, presuppositions tend to be dumped into the Milton model. But presuppositions is equally as important when we're looking at the meta model. That I teach the NLP presupposition patterns. I don't mean the presuppositions of NLP, like the map is not the territory and that sort of thing. I mean the linguistic presuppositions, like the subordinate clauses of time and all those big words. And I teach those as part of the meta model, because we can then, from what's being said, if we understand the meta model, we can infer, as you say, what has to be there for them to make that statement. For example, a client came to me the other day and he said, I want to be a better communicator because I want to change people's perception of sales. Now that we can infer straight away, but well, clearly he thinks people have a bad or a negative perception of sales, because if they had a good perception of sales, he wouldn't need or want to change it. So straight away, what he's not saying there, we can start to sit at what has to be presupposed to be there. We can infer, of course, these are just working theories. We have to check this by asking the appropriate questions. But we can use our own experiences to infer what can be sitting behind those statements, and then allow us to ask the appropriate question. And sometimes, as you know, when you use a meta model effectively, it can make you look like a mind reader. Because you'll ask a question and be like, oh, how did you know I was thinking that?
How did you know?
And it's not. It's just looking at their logic and what
you said it.
Yes. Or you didn't say it, often is the case mostly.
Yeah, yeah.
But what people don't say tends to be much louder than what they do say.
Yes, very, very true. Very true. So for our audience then, where did you start with this gentleman?
I kind of said to him, I can't remember the exact way it went, facts have been changed as I go along, I'm sure. But I started off just by saying, well, what makes you think that people have a bad interpretation of sales? And he went, sorry, what do you mean by bad? And I'm going, well, it's clear that you want to change people's point of view. So what's your purpose of wanting to change people's point of view? And I deliberately asked him quite a controversial question to start off with. I could have avoided that and just said, start off, what's your purpose of wanting to change people's perception? What will you get out of it and aim for the outcome? But I thought it would make sense, because there was this presupposition there that it was probably something negative you wanted to change. I made a bit of a guess and threw the question out there and got a really powerful response straight away, because I started to question his perception of people's perception of sales. So you started to break down his map of the world straight away, which got me through the door much more quickly than if we just started talking about what he wanted to get. And then he could have wandered into a moaning session of, oh, people are always accusing me of being a bad person just because I happen to be a salesman. And next thing you wander into the realms of, when I was three, mummy took the spoon away type therapy, don't you? Which in that situation, I certainly didn't want to go into, you know, it wasn't appropriate in that context to start doing some major therapy work with him.
Very, very powerful. Very, very powerful.
So I could have gone into more detail, but I thought it's probably best not to give you the whole pricey of the community of the conversation. We could have been here for quite a time. It was quite a long-winded conversation as we went around in circles a few times.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that and completely understand that. So one thing that, well, for me, I take my hands off with is the whole ethos around the demystification, which is very much my model of the world and my mission around bringing NLP into the real world and taking away all, well, as from my book side, the psychobabble, the big words. And unfortunately, the meta model is full of big words. And for our audience, anybody that is looking up the meta model, you will get lists and lists of really long words, which seem to have more letters than Scrabble would be able to throw together, which is unfortunate. And, you know, whether that's founded because of the initial founders being linguistics themselves, so they had the power of the big words to start off with. How do you break them down to make it easier for your students to digest it and to understand?
Well, it's always important to give the titles, because I recognise the students will go away and will read more about the meta model. I didn't used to teach the titles. I would leave that bit of data out, but then people would come back and think they hadn't learnt it all because I hadn't given the specific titles. But I tend to always do a very powerful reframe of saying, you know, the title's the least important thing. The only time you need to remember the titles, if you want to, you know, teach it, you need to know them. If you're going to use it, you don't need to know the title. So you're building, you know, quite, do my best to build up a comfort with the idea there are going to be big titles, but we're just going to mention them in passing. And where the meta model demystify came from was actually a joke I made, because even though I had built up this pre-frame, one person, you could see they were really struggling in the course. And I went, oh, what's happened? How can you struggle? He said, I just can't get past the titles. I'm sorry, I just can't get past them. And I went, well, make up your own titles. Just call them Bob or Dave or, you know, whatever you want to call them. And that's where the idea came from, of actually doing the meta model demystified. So I tend to teach the titles around the language patterns, actually around the questions that they suggest, rather than the titles they've been given. So, for example, you know, the mind reading statements, you know, I would often say to teachers, the how do you know question. If you're looking at your, you know, lost performatives, you're going to be talking about your, you know, who, what, where, you know, the who said that, whom said that type questions, where did you hear that type stuff, you know, the universal quantifiers. You can look at the what, every time, always, only. So you start looking, rather than giving the big titles, you pick up the sensory specific information that people can collect, the words they should be listening out for and what that infers. So when you do slap the title on it, they have already feel comfortable with the sort of thing they're listening out for. So when you finally go, oh, an incident, and we call this a lost performative, or, you know, we call this a universal quantifier, then everyone's already comfortable in the state of going, oh, right, that's just a title, is it? And then they'll write that down in their little book. And then when they go off and maybe read more about NLP, at least they'll recognise the titles and recognise what they refer to.
Yes. Very good. The universal quantifier, specifically, is one I think I use probably the most, those two, actually, but the... especially with my current group of patients within the bloodborne viruses world, because they do use so many generalizations and sweeping statements. And I mean, that's mainly because of their sense of self and their interpretation of the world and the effects the world has had upon them. So it's very quick, powerful, pinned down questions that you can use, that it's almost like... seeing a red light when you hear, well, for me anyway, a red light comes on as soon as I'll hear a generalisation.
Yeah, and it...
To go into the specifics of it.
Yeah, and it's what's implied as well as what's explicitly said. You know, pretty much all statements... there's one C straight away, there's the universal quantifier, isn't it? pretty much all statements are universalised, because that's the way our brain works. We tend to... You know, you probably the same, have clients who come in and say, oh, I've tried everything. And depending on what mood I'm in, I'll either say, well, clearly you haven't tried everything because you haven't tried speaking to me yet. Or I'll say, have you tried it standing on your head? And they'll look at me like I've gone mad and go, no. And I go, well, you haven't tried everything then, have you? And it's just, as you say, about breaking down those universalizations. And it's what we get stuck in, isn't it? A lot of the time is we go, well, I've tried something once or twice. It hasn't worked. That means I'll never be able to do it. And it's, you know, if Edison has said that, inventing the light bulb, with, well, he didn't invent the light bulb, did he? Nikola Tesla did. But if Edison had said that when he was inventing his bits and bobs, then we'd never have a lot of the things we've got today. You know, what was it? I was reading about Steve Jobs and the early Apple computers, most of them, like, keeled over because they were so enjoying building the computers, they kept going. They didn't do it once or twice and went, oh, it's rubbish, it's never going to work. But we tend to do that, unfortunately.
We do. Sentences that I hear all too often. Sentences that I'd like to discuss with you even further than that, but unfortunately, okay, a half an hour has almost come to an end.
Wow.
I'm very conscious. I want to make sure our audience knows where they can get your book from and how they can contact you. So can you give our details, your details out?
Sorry. Yeah, sure. My main website is mattcaulfield.co.uk. That's mattcaulfield.co.uk. And that's where you've got all the training and all the coaching ideas. If you're interested in the NLP Demystified, you can just go to nlpdemystified, that's all one word, .com. And that will show you details of the MetaMod Demystified, but also of the additional books that unfortunately we haven't had a chance to chat about today. I'm just in the process of finishing up the next one on nested loops, which will hopefully be out in the next few weeks. So you'll find all the details there. The site is new, so if you're listening to this when it very first goes out, I apologize. It's a bit of a mess. It will be tidied up in the next couple of weeks. I'm building it live rather than building it behind the scenes and launching it, which probably isn't the best way around, but there you go. And of course, if you just go to amazon.com or amazon.co.uk and search for the Meta Model or for Matt Caulfield, you will find the book and books listed there, which you can pick up on Kindle.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. It has been fantastic having you on the show today. And, well, I know hopefully our audience anyway will be as excited as we both are over the Meta Model, and hopefully inspired some of our practitioners out there just to get more involved with the Meta Model. I think I know I certainly was a bit scared of it when I first started doing the diploma levels and practitioner. It was like trying to get my head around it.
Yeah.
Hence, I wish your book was written 8 years
ago. Oh, I hated it when I very first came across it and tried to ignore it. And that's what fueled me to do this, because I was determined to understand it. There we go.
I am really looking forward to the rest of your series of books, and I'll certainly be first in the queue to get them to enhance myself further. So a big thank you again, Matt, for joining us today, and also a big thank you to all of our audience for tuning in today. If you'd like to learn more about NLP, then tune in each week and also visit my website, www.donnablunston.com, where you can pick up a copy of my best-selling book, Psychobabble, a straightforward, plain English guide to the benefits of NLP. Also visit theorganicview.com and sign up for our newsletter, which will keep you updated with the up-and-coming shows, guests and online workshops. You can also follow us on Facebook at /TheNLPView or Twitter at TheNLPView. Look forward to speaking to you again next week. Thank you. Bye-bye.